literature reviews today then. Hopefully this is going to fit quite comfortably after what we did 2 weeks ago. Because if you can think of the way in which most PhDs are constructed, there will be a chapter that focuses almost solely on the existing academic literature, and that chapter will almost always come immediately after the introduction. So in one way, the introduction and the chapter on the literature that follows it should be seen as companion pieces, because they will follow logically from one another in such a way where they begin to establish the discussion that you're having within the thesis. Because the introduction, as you remember from 2 weeks ago, makes a series of claims on behalf of your own work. What's distinctive about that work, what's original about that work, what's important about that work. But what you'll tend to make the claims against is the existing literature. So if you've used your introduction to make claims about the distinctiveness of your own work, then the next chapter is the one that you demonstrate how distinctive it is in relation to the existing literature. So hopefully it follows on naturally from where we left off 2 weeks ago. And I think it does make a lot of sense to begin to think of those two core components of your thesis as in some sense companions. By the time the examiners get to the end of the chapter after the introduction where you talk about the literature, they really want to know everything about what you're attempting to do in what comes next. So this is the second element of the groundwork part of the thesis. Both the introduction and the chapter that follows it can both be seen as part of the groundwork. Now, the attentive people among you might have noticed that I was using a number of rather elaborate configurations in my speech there to avoid calling it the literature review chapter. There is always an issue about whether you should be thinking in terms of the literature review chapter, or simply a chapter that follows the introduction that speaks specifically about the literature. Now, what's the difference between the two? The main difference, I think, is that literature review is a technique rather than a chapter. So I'm not sure it makes sense to talk about the literature review chapter. However, perhaps every one of you, if not just at this point, but certainly within the next few weeks, we'll have conversations with someone where you start discussing the literature review chapter. And that's because within academia, everyone talks about the literature review chapter, but I'm not sure anyone means it literally. Yeah, so it's one of those strange things where I overhear conversations in the corridor, or indeed through the walls, seeing as I sit in an office next to the PhD offices, and the walls are not particularly thick. I can hear conversations about the literature review chapter. How are you getting on with your literature review chapter? Everyone thinks in terms of a literature review chapter. I suspect that every academic member of staff in this department has spoken to at least one of their PhD students about the literature review chapter. Have I done that with you, Fabian?
Yes, yeah.
I'm
more concerned about being in the office next to you.
And you recorded that concern for the benefit of the panel, which was very good of you. Thank you very much for that. It is one of those strange things where it becomes habitual to talk about the literature review chapter, but I'm not sure anyone really means that. Certainly the chapter that comes after the introduction is going to be focused almost entirely on the existing literature, but every other chapter will speak to the literature in some way. So if you think of literature review as a technique that obviously you're going to use and use to a good degree in that chapter that establishes your argument in relation to the literature, but also think of it as a technique that you're likely to adopt at some stage in pretty much every chapter in your PhD. Even if you're working subsequently at an empirical level, you will still want your empirics to talk to something. And what is it that every aspect of a PhD does talk to and is required to talk to? It's the existing literature. So every time you're trying to produce an account of the existing academic literature, you are engaged, whether you know it or not, in literature review technique. And all of this is slightly different to just having a single literature review chapter which would then allow you to cast off all thoughts of that sort of technique and to enter another register altogether. So what advice can I give you then about how to develop your literature review technique? I think in general there are two properties of a good literature review. Property number one is when the boundaries are set in a very clear manner and an unequivocal manner, so that you have a sense of the scope of what you're trying to do, and that scope is manageable, and you don't go too far outside of that scope. One of the things that distinguishes a very good from a not so good literature review is when there's too much in it. The library is a big and foreboding place, especially now that most library holdings are online and you have access to absolutely everything. There will be a whole ton of literature that you read that is important for the way that your thinking has developed through your PhD, but will have no place in your final submitted thesis. And one of the reasons for that is that there's just too much of it. You're going to be influenced by too many things over the next 4 years to be able to write about all of them in any review of the literature. So one of the important things that you must remember in terms of literature review is what not to talk about, as well as what to talk about. And I think I got that slightly wrong. Didn't I say that an important thing to remember? It's about learning how to think of what you can afford to leave out. So one of the things that you need to learn is how to be discriminating between things that you've read within the literature that must form part of your literature review, and things that might still have been fundamental to the way that your thoughts have developed, but are not specifically concerned with the way that you want to set your own argument up. So setting the boundaries of a literature review is something that takes a bit of getting used to, I think. Trial and error is probably the best way of doing that. Accepting that your literature review is going to go through a number of drafts. It'll go through a number of drafts for a number of different reasons. One reason is that all of the literature that you will want to talk about in relation to how you place yourself with it and against it, in opposition to it, and in line with it, all of that literature hasn't yet been published. It might not even have been written. So there will be a natural updating process that takes place over the course of the 4 years on the programme. So the boundaries can be set at least provisionally at this stage, but the content of what appears within the boundaries is likely to be fluid. It will change over time. The second very important thing to do when it comes to your literature review technique is how to establish your focal point. One of the problems with any literature, of course, is that it can be read in any number of different ways. And that there are presumably an infinite number of different ways of reading and established bodies of work, depending on the perspective that you use to read it through. So how do you derive a clear and unequivocal focal point in that regard? Well, hopefully your own research questions will give you a good guide as to how you can develop that core focal point. So your literature review, although it will feel quite extensive, although if I told you now that most chapters that appear after the introduction in a PhD thesis are at least 12,000 words long, you might be thinking, oh dear, cause for panic, how on earth am I going to write 12,000 words about the existing literature? By the time you come to finalise that particular chapter, I'm absolutely sure that you'll be thinking, how do I only write 12,000 words about it? And setting the boundaries in a way that limits the scope of what you talk about, so that the scope is smack on your focal point and matches clearly your underlying research questions, that's probably the key way in which you go from how do I write 12,000 words to how do I only write 12,000 words on the existing literature. Let me give you one or two insights into some of the generic literature review types that I've seen over the course of my career. So if you think of all of the PhDs that I've examined, all of the PhDs that I've supervised, I think it's almost natural that you begin to appreciate that there are different types of literature review that you see and that you come across. And some, I'm sure, are better than others. So let me try to tell you the ones that I think I've come across. I've got a list of 7 in front of me here. I'll leave you to guess which you think are the better ones. And it should be quite obvious because of the way that I'm going to describe them. Firstly, my first generic literature review type I've called on this handout the scattergun approach. So you know immediately that I'm going to be advising you to avoid the scattergun approach in all of the work that you do. I think this tends to be one of the least effective ways of undertaking a literature review. I think it's in evidence when the person who's written it has not quite been sure what it is that they're trying to say. And of course, if you read a literature review of this nature as a PhD examiner, you might get very worried quite quickly. Because if you're struggling to find evidence that the candidate knows what they're trying to say, do they know their own argument well enough to be able to flesh it out into a passable PhD? So a scattergun approach is where a little bit of everything from all over the place in the library has all been forced into one literature review that seems to lack a sense of its own proportions and also to lack a sense of its own boundaries. So you can imagine an academic magpie taking a bit from here, a bit from there, and a bit from absolutely everywhere, throwing it all in together and hoping that what comes out of it is a coherent and coordinated literature review. What is likely to come out of it is going to be the exact opposite of that, unfortunately. So please, please, please try to avoid doing anything that's overly scattergun. And of course, nobody's going to start off with the express intention of writing in that register. So it's something that happens accidentally. And the more that I can warn you against accidentally falling into that trap, I think the more that you can keep in mind the need to do precisely that. Okay? Secondly, I've got a category here that I've called the tailored approach. And I'm sure this is the more effective pair of the scattergun approach because it's obvious really, just its opposite. So you can imagine here when clear and informed decisions have been made before the literature review begins as to what should be included and what should be excluded. So decisions have been made in consultation with supervisors, obviously. Decisions have been made and have been made beforehand about where the boundaries are and about what sort of content reflects the most sensible approach to the boundaries of the literature review. The literature here should still be read as thoroughly as possible, but the presentation of the literature can be tightly bound to a core number of key points. I think this is going to sound counterintuitive when I say it out loud to you and you hear it for the first time, but I think that some of the best literature reviews that I've ever read are the ones that tell me least about the literature. And what I mean by that is something very specific, that they've told me in great depth all of those things that I need to know about the literature if I'm going to understand exactly how this thesis is placed within the literature. That they haven't told me too many things about that literature that are extraneous to the objectives of the PhD itself. It's another breadth versus depth issue, isn't it? We've come across at least a couple of those already this year. And if you're ever in doubt, emphasise the depth of the argument rather than the breadth. And the same is true with the literature review technique. If in doubt, review a tightly circumscribed literature in depth that matches specifically the aims and objectives of your thesis, rather than trying to throw a little bit of too much in there. My third generic type I've called the expansive approach. And I think the expansive approach is almost a country cousin of the scattergun approach. And for this reason, it might make sense to think of them in the same way. The expansive approach emerges when somebody starts off telling you that they've set the boundaries in a nicely constrained manner, and then proceeds to demonstrate something rather different to that, that they open up loads of additional questions, that they seem to be moving from tightly concentric circles that bound the thesis very, very nicely into something that's much larger and is actually usually too large for a single PhD ever to cope with sufficiently. So the expansive approach is one where lots of questions are left hanging, that they're just not answered because they're not really a core part of the PhD itself, and the literature review is much bigger than the PhD could ever hope to be. The opposite to that I've called the limiting approach, and I think that this is probably a country cousin of the tailored approach. And again, this is something that I hope you might be able to aim for in time, at any rate. So a limiting approach does exactly what you would expect it to do now that I've given it that name for you. It places limits on just how broad and just how expansive you can be with your literature review. So it accepts that you cannot talk about everything, and it also accepts that your PhD examiners are not going to want you to talk about everything. Because if your PhD examiners want a conversation with you that's rather more expansive than the PhD thesis itself, well, that's what the viva's for. So don't try to preempt what's coming in the viva by being too expansive in your literature review. Try to limit it so it focuses as tightly as possible on the core questions underpinning your research. I've also, during my time in the job, seen what I think are three other types of literature review. One of those, so this is number five, I've called here the reporting approach. And I think that this is another largely ineffective way of writing a literature review. So it's as if the student wants to tell you a bit about everything that they've read. And often in a list-like manner, they just report what they found within the literature. So they will tell you that X, Y, and Z have all written in a related way to the topic, the broad topic of their concern. X has written this, Y has written that, Z has written something else. And what you get is a series of discrete statements that don't really talk to one another about how the literature comes together as a whole. You just get every single element of the literature spoken about in its own terms. And you can imagine what it's like to read 12,000 words of that. You might also be able to imagine how painful it would be to write 12,000 words of that nature. Because what you should be aiming for is not that reporting approach, but number six, what I would want to call a themed approach. The literature, obviously, revolves around a series of core intellectual themes. There will be a series of interventions, a series of claims that are made within the literature that seem to give you a way of grouping together different authors' work. And if you can identify the underlying themes which allow you to review different authors' work together, then you're showing a level of appreciation and a level of understanding of the literature which will always go down well in the minds of your examiners. They will be impressed if you can move as far away as possible from the reporting approach to literature reviews to something that looks as though it's organised around a series of discrete but often interlocking themes. So the more thematic coherence you can get into your view of the literature, I think, the better. And finally, one thing that I have seen on at least a couple of occasions where I've had a great deal of sympathy for the student in question is what I've termed here the apologetic approach. Some people go way over the top in trying to point out all of the weaknesses in their own argument, and therefore all of the weaknesses in their own approach to the literature, and therefore all of the reasons why an examiner shouldn't really take what they're saying particularly seriously. Now, I know that it's sometimes difficult to think that you're arguing against an established body of literature and you need to be critical of that established body of literature. I know that lots of people think quite deferentially towards the people who are responsible for producing that literature in the first place. So it can be quite difficult to be critical. But at the same time, it's a big mistake to swing all of the other way and to apologise for every word that you're going to write before you've actually written it. And I've seen that within a couple of literature reviews of PhDs that I've examined as well, where the student has seemed to be so unsure of their right to criticise the existing academic literature that they've gone all the way to the other side of the spectrum and have pretty much said before they start that their view is not really to be trusted. Obviously, that's not a very good message to send out to your examiners, because what you want to give them the impression that they're reading is a thoughtful account of the literature written in authoritative academic terms that has been generated by a deep understanding of what you will have read over the next 4 years. So those are the seven types of literature review that I could think of. Avoid the scattergun approach, please. Avoid the expansive approach, please. Avoid the reporting approach, please. And avoid the apologetic approach, please. And if you can organise your own literature review technique around delivering a tailored approach, a limiting approach, and a themed approach, I think you'll have cracked it. But let me finish repeating one of the observations I made for a start. Nobody will expect you to crack the key to writing a good literature review in one go, simply because a literature review is always something that evolves over time. So it is something that will go through a number of iterations, a number of drafts, and what you were given to read in advance of today's class, these were by no means the first drafts of these chapters that I saw. Because once again, it's work from two of my PhD students, and it's work that did develop in a series of clear steps over time. It's often necessary to put on paper your first view of where you stand in relation to the literature very early within your PhD programme. But what happens then if your view of what your research questions and your contributions are change over time? Presumably, your position in relation to the literature will change accordingly. And if that's the case, then your literature review will need to be updated as well. So literature reviews, like introductions, are works in progress for almost the entirety of the whole of your PhD programme. It's usually only towards the end of it that everything comes together and you can be satisfied that you now have a draft that can be submitted. And if you're not sure whether you can spot exactly where you are in that process and how close you are to having a submittable draft, that's one of the jobs that your supervisor should do for you. So you can rely on your supervisors to give you advice in that regard. Okay, that's all in terms of my introduction. Let me turn the tape off now.